Hello, everyone, and welcome to Project Insights Agile webinar. The topic for today, I'm a product owner. How do I tell a better customer story? We'd like to give a very warm welcome to our presenter today, Dr. Dave Cornelius. Dr. Dave is a value delivery leader at Bio-Rad Laboratories. He influences cross-functional teams to deliver amazing quality products to delight customers. Dr. Dave is the founder of the Five Saturdays program that empowers high school students through agility and innovation by providing learning experiences in technology and lean business. He is also the author of the book, Transforming Your Leadership Character, the Lean Thinking and Agility Way, and the innovator of the game, Agility Leadership. Dr. Dave also produces a podcast on iTunes and Google Play titled No Share with Dr. Dave. Good morning, Dave. How are you today? Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Denise, for having me. I'm delighted to be here today. And welcome, audience. We look forward to sharing new knowledge and also just getting you some of your questions in. So let's begin. I assume that I have keyboard and mouse control, Denise. So let's see. Okay, it's not advancing, so I'm not sure. All right, let's see now. Here we go. Well, that's not moving on my side. There you go. Okay, good. So the PO role represents the voice of the customer. See, this position is essential to prioritize and evaluate the outcomes produced by the teams that are the builders of things. I say selecting the right person to represent VOC is critical to build the right customer value at the right time. So I could tell you that the name product owner is misleading and may lead people to believe that the person in this role owns the product. So there are many stakeholders in the organizations who represent ownership of the products. So germinal writings from Schwaber and Beadle in 2002 stated, the product owner is responsible for prioritizing work in a backlog. Customer demands are prioritized by the PO, but we also have architectural stuff and technical demands, and they're best served and prioritized by the architects and the software development teams. See, the Scale Agile framework, or it's called SAFE, it defined business and architecture epics to ensure a complete picture of the work to be done and a need for balance so that we do not end up with too much technical debt and too many customer functionality. So I could tell you the PO job is difficult. Satisfying customer wants and market demands requires special skills to carefully integrate with multiple groups in the organization to deliver value. The PO can tell the best customer story when they're able to develop partnerships with a cross-functional team that produces and support product for the market consumption. So let's talk about what are the topics today? What are the fun things we're going to talk about? We'll talk about the PO role and skills. We'll get into the PO role and strategy and portfolio, requirements and backlog definition, and just getting to done, right? That's the state that most organizations want to get to, is get to that done state, get work done. So there's a few learning objectives. We want you to be able to discover what makes a good PO, identify criteria to select a PO, and build a team of high-performing POs. And POs is just an acronym for product owner. I think we should probably feel that by now. So the PO has a role. And you can think of the product owner as a liaison between the customer and the software development team. And they provide these specific functions in terms of representing the voice of customer. They look at they prioritize the product backlog. And the product backlog is nothing more than a series of things that the customer wants and in a very specific order that would provide the greatest value. They develop the acceptance criteria, manage scope and content, They validate and accept the team verified work. As the teams are building things and they verify the work, we need the product owner to validate that what they asked for is actually done. And then they're more internal focused versus market focused. And sometimes people get confused between the PO and PM, and we'll really create a distinction so everyone understands what that is. So I believe there's a set core set of skills that a PO need. And so to be an effective PO, he or she must be able to communicate and organize business goals. So the critical skills include effective communication and writing ability. We also want to look at, let me just bring something down here so we don't get killed with pings all day. Storytelling about the who, what, and why. They have to be organized and can prioritize work. And they're available to respond to questions by the teams. Because as you could imagine, you know, as the PO puts information out, the teams will have questions. But I think there's another skill that's really critical, which is called elicitation. And elicitation is just one of those fundamental skills that a PO need. And this is an ability to think critically and to plan out the insightful questions while observing customers. And maybe even observing the team. You know, a few activities to help with elicitation may include brainstorming. They may use surveys and questionnaires and even workshop. And so the desired outcome for elicitation activities include, you know, one, collecting the customer wants and really getting a good handle of why is it important to do certain things and in a certain order. They become active listeners as they're going through either a workshop or they're doing a brainstorming session or doing some observation. And then they always ask great open questions and just simple things of how well this specific user functionality help the organization or help you as a customer to achieve a specific job, which gives an opportunity for great feedback and great information. Now, also the PO has an opportunity to participate in strategy and portfolio. And one of the great things that, and it's, this is a big box that has, you know, strategic backlog, a portfolio backlog, team backlog, and market launch. And so they play an important role in some of the portfolio activities, you know. And so as we start to take a vision and allow that to become a tangible set of deliverables, so the PO helps to define things like business epics, which is a minimum viable product. And in duration, this takes roughly about 1 to 3 months in size of work. The other thing that they're heavily involved with is features. And features represents work that are about 1 to 2 sprints in duration. And a sprint is typically 2 weeks long. Also critical is that they build user stories. And these are just small unit of work, usually 2 to 5 days in duration. Me, I prefer 2 to 3 days. Smaller amount of work, faster feedback, give us an opportunity to inspect and adapt. But also, they also may participate with help to provide clarity around certain types of spikes. But also, it's feedback, you know, it's really getting involved and using those elicitation skills to capture information from the customers as well. And also the rollout in some organizations, the product owners used to participate in the rollout because, you know, you may have your own, you know, product launch or market launch team. Now, the PO as a product manager sometimes produce certain amount of challenges, right? It could be challenges. So in smaller companies, you know, sometimes it's possible, right, for a PO to also be a product manager. But as the company becomes larger and it has a global footprint, it becomes more disruptive to the teams, and it also starts to affect quality delivery. The PO playing a dual role can also be taxing on the product owner himself. So when you think of product managers, they're more market focused. They spend most of their time outside of the building, in the market, trying to collect information. The product owner, on the other hand, they're more internally focused and spend a lot of their time working with the team. So the appropriate partnership is the product manager with a product owner, or product manager with two or three product owners, which gives them the ability to get outside, understand the markets, understand some of the work that's needed by the customer, and to be able to relay that in at the product owner's level. Now, the product owner may have great technical skills. They may also have great elicitation and communication skills. And so one of the feedback and the challenges is that when a PO is playing a product manager role, sometimes you have delays in questions, or they can't do their product manager job. And then also the teams suffer when the PO is overworked. And that's just typical of just about anything that you do. If you're taxed and pulled in too many different directions, it's impossible to be focused. So the PO also have anti-patterns. And when we talk about anti-patterns, what we're talking about, that they're just ineffective behaviors that do not help the team succeed. And a few that comes to mind is, you know, the PO micromanaging daily work. I mean, who wants that in life anyway? But when you have those scenarios where you have the PO micromanaging daily work, it makes it very ineffective with teams, because we try to make them teams to be as self-organizing and self-aligned as possible in the practice of agility. Sometimes if they refuse to add acceptance criteria to a user story or a feature or even to an epic. And an acceptance criteria is important because it really tells us this piece of work, here are the acceptable, you know, activities or outcomes that we're looking for. So if you have a login screen, for example, you have a username and a password. Now, when you hit login or submit, well, the username and password should be entered into the screen. I mean, it's some of these, this is just a very simple example, but it's very critical, and all the different variances there of that. So we'll talk about that, how we could build better acceptance criteria later. When they start to estimate work for the team, oh, this should only take you 1 month or 2 days. It's okay to have long-term goals and said that we would like to release something by December of 2017, and whatever fit into that period of time based on the team's capacity and capability, then that's okay. They tried to align user stories with a release deadline, which is very difficult because basically only the team knows the effort. Also, when they're too busy for the team, they're traveling, they're in a lot of meetings, they're unable to answer the necessary questions needed by the team. So now here we come to our very first group interaction. And the question is, elicitation is an important skill for the product owner to develop. Is that true or is that false? And just remember that as we speak about elicitation, we're trying to collect information from our customers. We're trying to collect information from the markets. We try to understand the wants and the why. And it's really important to ensure that they ask open questions and they become active listeners. So, Denise, how are we polling right now? Ah, good. I think everyone is paying attention this morning. So good. So 96% of you said yes, it is very much true that elicitation skills is really important for the product owner to develop. Okay, let's try this again. Denise, I'm not getting it. Okay, there you go. So there's definitely a value of well-defined requirements. One of the things is that PMI in 2014 says that poor requirements result in 47% of project failures and 35% of project overrun. So just by not having things well defined could be very costly, you know, roughly in the neighborhood of 82% of project failures in total is because of poor requirements. And when you have well-defined requirements, it helps you to understand, you know, what is the customer value or the voice of the customer. And people and the teams have a much better understanding of what to build and what to test. More important, it improves performance and stakeholder confidence in the fact that they understand what you're trying to do to meet their vision. So as I stated before, PMIs in one of their research, demonstrated that, yes, poor requirements result in, project failures and project overrun. And, I don't know if any of you worked in projects where things are not well defined, but it could be quite challenging if we don't get our arms around that. So that is a key component for essentially a product owner. Let me mute myself for 1 second. Okay, sorry about that. I need to clear my throat. Okay, come back here. Now, working with customers. Now, it's really important to work with customers to make sure that we could collaborate and develop a high-level roadmap. And part of that is, as we get better with our elicitation skills, we have the ability to really understand what the customer wants. And in the process, we understand exactly how do we provide great clarifications back to the customer. Maybe the clarification is on capabilities after speaking with the technical team to say, hey, yes, I understand that you want that feature now or that capability now. But, given where we are, in our cycle of development, it may take a little longer than anticipated. We want to make sure that when you work with customers, you bring them into the sprint review. If you're in Scrum, at the end of 2 weeks, all right, it's the end of a sprint, and there's an event or ceremony called sprint review where the customer gets to see exactly the progress of where things are. So as you can see, there's frequent feedback and frequent input into this process. I said, we also need to be open to accept changes to backlog items. It's not fixed, and it's we inspect and adapt in this practice. So it's okay for, a customer to come in and say, hey, we changed our mind. We'd like to do something a little bit differently, and we could get that, into our backlog, just as long as the work hasn't started yet. If the work is started, we'd like to finish the work for the sprint, then come back and make adjustments because it's only 2 weeks. The also thing that when you're working with customers is like, do not promise a release date. And, like I said, you could establish milestone. I said, well, this is a milestone of what we're targeting. But to say that sometimes things must be done, it makes it very difficult at times. So the work of the product owner is to define the backlog. And we know the backlog are dynamic and they change with market conditions. They're not static. One of the things that we'll talk about more is about the work to be done. So the voice of the customer is one perspective, but to me, the jobs to be done, the work to be done is the actual observation of what customer really wants. And this is a concept that was put forth by Clayton Christensen, who wrote the book, The Innovator's DNA. And so I thought that was a very interesting concept of jobs to be done versus voice to customer. In defining the backlog in partnership with architects, it helps to define both business and technical business needs. And in those description. There's a description of the work to be done. There's some estimate. There's some business value that's also defined, which is done in collaboration with others. Now, all of this is refined through the collaboration with the team, working with the team to actually understand more about implementation. And just to let you know, it's just not a requirement document. Some people may want to write a book about it, but it has a very simple format. And as we look at that format, it's a simple format. This is a user story format, and it describes who, what, and why. It says, as a type of user, I want some tasks completed so that I may achieve some value, goal, or benefit. It's really just a simple language like that. You know, if you were a panelist, you know, participating in this agile webinar, you may say, as a panelist, I want go to meeting to work flawlessly so that I may deliver a great message to the participant. And so the great value of using something as simple as this to start to describe the wants, it's just a great consistent format for the customer, and we understand the wants and the why. And also, that just really helps to create an agreement between the customer and the product teams, that we have a great understanding of what that looks like. So before, I talked about acceptance criteria, and the acceptance criteria is really important because it's really the behaviors that we're trying to describe so that we could understand the desired value. And so when we think of an acceptance criteria, there's a format that is really helpful and very straightforward. It's called behavior-driven development, or BDD. And it also, you could include positive and negative scenarios. So the simple format is given, when, then. And it's given some initial context or conditions, which are called the givens. It says, when an event or action occurs, then ensure a particular set of observable outcomes occur. And I'll just give you an example of what that looks like. And I'm using this as, you know, given we have an internet connection and the software webinar is up and the presenter is ready, when Denise starts the webinar and introduces Dr. Dave, then Dr. Dave can begin his presentation and participants can learn something new. And this is just really a simple, straightforward format that helps everyone to understand what are the givens, when certain actions are taken, and then there are these specific outcomes. The other actions, now that we have a language to describe the work that we want, now we also have a language and a format to describe the acceptance criteria, there is additional work to be done called backlog grooming. And backlog grooming is nothing more than an activity where the product owner connects with the team, and basically it's a refinement of the customer jobs to be done. And I'm using this word customer jobs to be done and wants to be almost synonymous, but even though jobs to be done is more of an observation and it's more definitive than just a want. Part of the work is to take epics and break them down to features and features to use the story. So epics are really huge amount of work that takes anywhere from 1 to 3 months. Features are things that we want to get done within 2 weeks, and user stories are in a more granular fashion. I like 2 to 3 days, but some people will satisfy or accept 2 to 5 days. So as you could see, we're breaking things down from a large epic down into something more granular, like a user story. So we want to make sure that the acceptance criteria is well-defined. I like to include user personas in epics, features, and stories so that people begin to have the appropriate context that the want is for a technician working in a laboratory as opposed to just, you know, as a user, which, you know, it doesn't really help you to understand the context of how this feature or piece of work is done. I also am a big fan of including user journeys from UX workshops. And if you're doing any types of screens, user interfaces, then wireframes are really important to help illustrate exactly, you know, what the user is trying to get across. So how the user will interact with your application. Now, we're back to asking another great question, and we're looking at our second interaction as a group. We want to look at, you know, what is the effect of poor requirements on a project? Is it A, 40%, 47% of project failures and 35% project overrun? B, 47% of project fund and 35% project done. And C, 30% of project wins and 30% project value. Or D, 10% of project failures and 90% project overrun. What is your answer? As we know that requirements are extremely important to enable the organization or allow the teams to really understand what work needs to get done and how can we do them effectively. The importance of having great acceptance criteria is really critical and puts us in a position to really understand what's really needed. But as we look back too, there are additional things that we've described in terms of having user journeys from user experience workshops and wireframes. So those are also critical elements to ensure that we have the right requirements so that we can be successful. So what's the response, Denise? How are the teams doing? Awesome. 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 Yes. A, 96% for sure. That is the right answer. Now there's another set of activities that take place. I guess I'm just waiting for either the screen to catch up or, yeah, there you go. Integration with teams. So one of the big job that's done by a product owner is to spend a fair amount of time integrating with different teams. So one of the teams that's critical at the very early part of a project or engagement is to have a user experience, user interface design team. And they're really heavily vested in the user journey and to establish wireframes. And you may say, well, why is that really important? Well, there's nothing more important than to be present observing a customer, look at how they interact with your system, also to be able to get a pulse of how they feel about your system, because it's also emotional and not just a physical aspect. And so to also make sure that we have wireframes. So there's a team that spends lots of time doing this work, and it's really critical in today's market. As competition grows, we have to be a bit more targeted in our approach. And the second group is the architects. The architects generally produce some architectural epics, which end up in the product backlog. And this helps us to define our technology solution and how technology would really affect the software or products that we're developing. Also, development team, the people who are responsible for building software. We have product marketing, which is they're often more marketing focused. They're involved with more product launches. They're involved with doing certain level of strategies about what they will call upstream, where there's that's more strategies or downstream, where they're more involved with, you know, tapping into the market and understanding what's going on there. But also operation support. In there, this is where when you get your software launch or system launch into production, or you have it out in a SaaS offering, this is where you're going to have incidents. We don't build perfect software, so you need operation support who will notify you when the systems are down. It helps us to measure areas that we need to improve. And it also represents a very important voice of customer, because this is where most of the complaints are. Then this is where additional innovation can take place as well. But also customer support, you know, they also get a lot of calls and a lot of different notification. And this is just a source of items that we could fix, an opportunity, what I call opportunities for improvements. Now, let's talk about the challenges of being a PO or product owner. One thing that's a real challenge is that, you know, the voice of the customer is not always the jobs to be done. And I say this because you may ask a customer, so what's your you know, what are the things that you want from our system? And they may give you something as generic. Could you make this more red? Well, that's really not a jobs to be done. That's just an attribute of the system. And what would be better is for the PO working with the product manager, working with the UX UI team to really understand the customer jobs to be done, what would give them the greatest value in the practice of integrating with your system. It's also just trying to transform customer wants into tangible deliverables. It's not easy to do that, and it sometimes takes lots of work to be able to take what the customer is trying to describe to you or the market is describing to you and make that a tangible deliverables. And that's why it's really critical for the product owner to connect with many people in the organization. It's really looking also at the ability to articulate priorities and trade-offs. This is not easy. You know, why should I do, you know, this one feature over the other? And to be able to articulate that. Sometimes we have product owners that have too many products and not available to the team. And we know that certainly hurts productivity and quality. Also, it's when there are questions that are put out there by the team, and they said, oh, we're finished with all this work. And then this work is sitting there in a state that needs to get to done. And we're still waiting for the product owner to give feedback. And that also goes with when product owners are overworked and they don't have time to get things done. One of the big challenges too is like dealing with customers who do not understand the practice of Agile, and what they would like to do is have, you know, defined dates and said, well, this thing has to be done here. Well, it's good to have milestones, and there's nothing wrong with having those, but what fits into, you know, if you have a 5-pound bag of potatoes and you said we need to fill that within the next minute, well, what I can promise you is that at the end of 5 minutes or 1 minute, it will have a certain amount of potatoes in the bag. I can't promise you that the bag would be filled, because we just do not know, and we do not have the skills or the capability to really predict the future. So I often warn people about doing that. I said there's nothing wrong with putting a milestone out there, but also let's just be realistic. You know, you may even have to change the milestone date when you put one out there, because that's just a reality that it happens. I just want everyone to be aware of that. So there's also another attribute that we look for, that is for in product owners to be resilient. And so where they have a clear vision of the product roadmap and they are able to articulate and share that with the teams. Also mean just making sure that we understand the customer priorities and the market priorities to increase revenue, because that's why we build products. You know, even if you're a nonprofit and you're building a product or a service, there's also an eye on generating revenue, because you have to keep the business alive and keep the door open and pay salaries and all of those wonderful attributes of being in business. I think servant leadership qualities are important to really demonstrate resilience as well. And then, you know, the ability to say no to customers when necessary. You know, saying yes all the time could also put you in a position of compromise. And you want to, you know, say no in a very diplomatic way, but at times it's just necessary to do that. You don't have much of a choice. Either you're over-promising and under-delivering, and it's better to just deliver value, you know, at the capacity and capability of the team. I said measure for outcomes and not outputs. And the reason I say that is that I like to see finished features. And some people, you know, they want to measure how many story points are produced. You know, to me, story points is a relative sizing tool. And, you know, to spend time worrying about, you know, how many story points someone created, to me, that's an output. You know, what I really care about is that, you know, did you get this specific feature done within a sprint? To me, that's far more important. So one thing, you know, taking it up a level higher is to use something called objectives and key results. This is a practice that was it's used by Google, and I think it came from from Intel, actually, is where it was the first used and developed to really establish exactly what are the key objectives, what are the key results, and what is the confidence of getting that done. So, you know, when you start setting up OKRs for features or story objectives, this is really a great tool to help you get there and make sure that you have, you know, these critical elements of key results and confidence. Because basically, you know, you set up an objective and you've done your due diligence, you know, how confident are you of getting this done? Well, you know, if it's a 0.1 or 0.001, well, that's a very low confidence. But, you know, if it's 0.89 or 0.98, so that's a higher confidence. So at least it allows people and gives an indicator that in trying to achieve this very specific objective, people feel confident that they could get there. So I put out an example of really what's an objective. So you can say increase customer sales and payments through e-commerce. And so the key results that we want to look at, you know, we have like 20% of e-commerce sales processed by Q3. So you could see we actually have quantitative measures as part of the key results. We could say cross-sell customers to one adjacent product by Q3. That's also has something that we could measure. And we said, let's make sure that we can get our net promoter score for 5% by Q3. And so we'll say as a team, and that should be in another line, that we have a confidence of 0.6. So we're better than 50%. We're more at 60% confidence that we could achieve this. A net promoter score is nothing more than people's response emotionally or connectedly to your product itself. This is how well they feel about it. They go and they tell their friends, their girlfriends, their wives, their co-workers, hey, I just used this great product. I think you should check it out. You know, great word of mouth marketing. Now, I say that one of the things that the thing that I want to talk about is that to get the best customer story, and this is not a user story, but this is a general guess best customer story. I think that as a product owner, that they understand priority, and that's communicated and understood by customers and understood by team members who are building a product. We look at quality is delivered as a primary focus and have a great understanding of that. We have frequent deliverables, which are incremental, providing great improvements for the organization. And as the customer receives the jobs to be done satisfaction, they're actually producing a value that's usable and really allows the customers to feel satisfied in their action. So we have one more group interaction where we talk about the best customer story is when the jobs to be done is satisfied. Is that true, A, or false, B? I mean, what's your thought on that? So as I was talking about the jobs to be done, in Clayton Christensen's book, one of his examples was of a milkshake. And figuring out that people use a milkshake as a social item and in a way of enjoyment as well. So it was really interesting in terms of how people are using smoothies as a kind of a replacement for a milkshake, but it serves, you know, several purposes, right? It's one of those drinks that you could take your time to drink that down. It provides nutritional value. And so in the mornings, people are doing more and more smoothies. So we're satisfying a job by making sure that people are fed. It's providing a social item. So what say you? That's right. The majority wins, 76% for sure for A. Great. Just waiting for a system to catch up here with me. Okay. So in summary, we said the PO, product owner, represents the customer's priorities. They share the product roadmap with the organization, with the teams, making sure everyone understand when things or what is these high-level objectives and goals that we're trying to achieve. They provide clarity around epics and features and stories, and also helps to remove constraints from the product to really reduce any type of impediments so that we could be successful in the process. And that really wraps up this presentation about product ownership. And, you know, we have a few minutes to ask a few questions, and perhaps I could respond to those in a very timely manner. So, Denise, any questions that the people may have right now?
So let's give them a couple minutes to type in those questions in your question box. I don't know, in the meantime, you want to go through the rest of your slides and give them
sure.
some time to put their questions together?
Yeah. So I just want to let everyone know that for 2017, I've finished the Agility Leadership cards, which is, you know, volume 3. We have 1 and 2 already done. So 3 is going out to the printers. You could go to agilityleadership.com and we could start taking orders now. Something that you could use as a tool for learning, as a tool for interaction. You could use them now for if you're doing planning poker or any type of those social activities. Go and check that out, agilityleadership.com. Knowledge Share is where a lot of our knowledge comes from and where we share back. Even this presentation, we go out there and blog about it, make sure that we add additional information. Even some of the questions that are asked in this presentation is probably even elaborated more there as well. KnowledgeShare.org. The book that we have right out is called Transforming Your Leadership Character, The Lean Thinking and Agility Way. That's out on Amazon, and you could get that in as a Kindle. You could get it as an audiobook or also as a printed book. And there's also the volume 1 and 2 of the Agility Leadership game as well. I just want to let you guys know that I'm working on follow-up book to this called Elastic Minds, and so that may be out sometime in the fall in a digital format. 5 Saturdays, this is by far one of the most fun things to do. Is we're in, I think this Saturday is going to be week number 6, because we have 5 core Saturdays, and the first and the 7th Saturday are just more, the first is an introduction and the 7th is more of the awards, where we really celebrate the accomplishment of the students and the learning facilitators. So, you know, go out and check out www.5saturdays.org and learn more about what we're doing there. This year is really, really a lot of fun, where we're teaching our high school students, 14 to 19 year old, lean business by using a lean canvas, and they're setting up businesses. And also we're teaching them mobile application development, as well as job readiness, teaching them how to build a resume. So, you know, in our give back to our community, we're really trying to move the needle and help students be in a position to, you know, either find a job now or in the future or get to college. Just check that out. And I have a podcast where I interview several people at least once a month. I will have a topic posted where we have different conversations about different business things. We talk to industry experts about different topics, things that they're very much passionate about. You would also find it on grokshare.com, and as well as Knowledge Share with Dr. Dave on iTunes on Google Play. You have any questions, send them out to me at customercare@knowledgeshare.org, or just fire me up on Twitter. You could also blog with me at www.knowledgeshare.org. Coming up next month, so we're talking about the next role or the next group of people who participate in the Scrum deliverable, the Scrum teams. And so we're talking about Scrum Masters and how they facilitate team engagement for success. So Denise, how are we doing with questions so far?
They are coming right in. So let's start with our first question. How many projects do you recommend POs be responsible for?
I would say no more than two. And even though some people may stretch them out, and because to me, once you start getting beyond, you know, two to three projects, things become really squirrely, right? I mean, that means you have two to three teams to deal with. There's a lot of questions to answer. It becomes, you know, a very difficult, you know, action or activities for the product owner to do more than, you know, two to three. You know, to me, three is like the max that a product owner should have. I know I still see some people have more than that. And, you know, it's really difficult to really stay abreast and keep up. So that would be my recommendation.
Great. Thank you. Next question. How do you handle conflict between the customer lack of technical knowledge on the end of the product and the product owner's technical knowledge?
Well, first and foremost, the product owner should not really have a technical discussion with the customer, right? I mean, first and foremost, they're talking about jobs to be done. They're talking about the customer wants. If there is a technical discussion, then the product owner should bring in an architect or a senior person on their technical team to help bridge that gap. I tend to ask product owner to stay out of the tech because oftentimes, even though, like, even look at myself, even though I know technology really well, I don't write code anymore. I don't do as much architecture work anymore. So if you're away from it, I would not want a product owner to be in that position. So I would recommend that they talk about the wants of the customer, talk about the priorities, and if a customer needs to talk about technology, they bring in the right people to answer those questions.
Great, thank you. Next question. Where does software testing / QA fit into Agile teams? Is it part of the development team?
Yes, and in the new paradigm, we don't really have QA. We don't have a QA team. It's all part, it's just one team. So in the old paradigm, you would have a development team and a QA team, and development teams write code and then throw it over the wall to QA, and then you have this ping pong effect. Now you have the QA and developers working in tandem, you know, looking at what needs to be built up front, defining the different test requirements or test plans based on the actual acceptance criteria that's defined by a user story. So you have an integrated environment versus, you know, these two silos that exist still today in a lot of companies. So I think we have time maybe for one more question, because I know you have to get out and we have to end at, you know, at 9 o'clock.
Yes. So here's scenario/question. So when working with an organization in the midst of an agile transformation, divorcing from large upfront planning, resilience on monolithic BRDs is difficult. Currently, I find my client using user stories as just a table of content / pointer to the BRD. Clearly, this does not tell a good story. Can you provide some helpful insight on breaking that mental dependency on large upfront waterfall / plan-driven planning?
That's a very good question in terms of being able to, because we're almost talking about a culture shift. And which is, everyone knows those are really difficult. There, one way to go about doing that is there's a technique called story mapping to really go through and start building that type of integration with customers and said, well, here are all the things that you want. How do we start to break this down into smaller, you know, units of work, and so that's one technique that can be used, because we're doing a culture shift. The second aspect of it is making sure that we could get your customers to engage in the sprint reviews, which they get into the habit of seeing smaller incremental values that they could touch and give feedback. Because in the traditional way, the way we used to do things is that, you would get some requirements for 3 months, do some development for 6 months, and do some QA for 3 months or maybe a month. And then we bring the customers back and said, hey, look what we've done. And so this is a huge paradigm shift and a huge cultural shift where you're asking the customers to be more actively engaged in the process. And I don't know, but from my experience, what people like is that they begin to see progress taking place. And this doesn't happen overnight. This is something you have to really work on and work toward. So like I said, there's three things that I've just outlined. The first thing is try some story mapping activities. Also, make sure that they come to your sprint reviews and try to build some success into your outcomes so that they could see that, okay, I'm getting a little bit of value every 2 weeks. The first couple of weeks, don't really understand this so much, but ask them also to just suspend disbelief and also to just give it a try, right? And see if it doesn't work, then we could always go back to the old way. Well, just give it a try to make sure that you could get to the place of desire. And for me, people talk about transformation. You begin with adoption, and that begins with training and making sure and coaching. And then the next phase of that, and that normally takes about 9 months to a year to get adoption in. You started to change behaviors. And then from there, you can start talking about transformation where everyone is totally gets it and they see the value out of that. And I think that's probably about as much time as I have for answering questions for now. But if you, Denise, when you send me the other questions, I'll definitely answer them on knowledgeshare.org. See you soon, Denise, and thank you, audience.
Look for the KnowledgeShare with Dr. Dave podcast on iTunes and Google Play. The KnowledgeShare with Dr. Dave podcast is hosted on grokshare.com. If you have any questions for Dr. Dave, reach out on Twitter at Dr. Dave Info or at KnowledgeShare. This podcast, an interview produced by Dr. Dave Cornelius. Copyright 2017. KnowledgeShare. Dr. Dave. KnowledgeShare with Dr. Dave. KnowledgeShare with Dr. Dave.